by nature, I freely admit, and I spend all my days in the fields at a tiring old trade, which may well be unpaid, which brings all the farmers their yields.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking News for St Albans, Harpenden and the surrounding area. I'm Bill, and this is the Red Saturn programme for Saturday, August 23rd, 2025. I do hope you're all well and enjoying the summer.
Over queen and country, though the latter is no fault of mine, I work for all and sundry, I'm a labourer come rain or shine.
This is, of course, the time of year when many outdoor events take place, including all kinds of theatre and music festivals up and down the country. As you probably know by now, I'm a bit of a folk music fan, and I have been to a handful of folk festivals in the past couple of months. Just came back from one in Dorset. I'd like you to hear a selection of songs during the programme that represent some of the range of music commonly called folk. In the opening track is by Wilderness Yet. Don't forget, if you have a favourite song or piece you'd like to hear on the programme, do send your request in the red pack with a USB drive when you return it, and I'll do my best to track it down and play it. This week, as always, we start off with the news stories from the Hearts Advertiser. This will be followed by the radio listings and the audio-described TV listings. 10 Today is up next, our series of gentle exercise routines to help keep you moving at home. Then we'll have a bit of music, followed by our regular Events This Week in History feature. And then some famous birthdays. Another musical interlude will lead into the sounds of nature. This week, listening to Summer Migrants. Then from the Hearts Life Archive, we'll hear about the de Havilland Museum. After this, courtesy of TNF, Simon Martin will be giving us a tour of his local repair cafe.
I work for all and sundry. I'm a labourer, come rain or shine.
We start with the news, and our readers this week are Elizabeth, Gilly, Liz, Fiona, and Michelle.
Hello, Fiona here. My first article has the title Restaurants Plans Like a Nightclub. Licensing plans for a new restaurant at the Samuel Ryder Exhibition Hall have been likened to a nightclub during a formal discussion between councillors, the applicant and residents. A licensing subcommittee meeting was held regarding the new Mocha dining spot at 29 Hollywell Hills, St Albans. The eatery targeted the Grade 2 listed building formerly home to Café Rouge, earmarking the unit for a new restaurant under the Mocha umbrella. A premises application submitted in July revealed the venue's opening hours and also aimed for the sale of alcohol. During a public consultation, 58 respondents voiced their concerns, prompting the meeting. Councillor Sinead Howland headed the meeting regarding the licensing application, which provided residents, councillors and the applicant a chance to discuss their concerns. Specialist licensing and regulation barrister Marcus Lavell acted on behalf of nearby residents in Albert Road, while Hildegard Cameron and Manveer, Mocha's general manager, represented the restaurant. Mr. Lavell addressed residents' qualms, labelling the application similar to that of one for a 2 a.m. nightclub on a residential street rather than a restaurant. Issues with late-night music, noise pollution and public nuisance were all cited by neighbours. In response, Ms. Cameron and Manveer said they understand and appreciate the concerns of the community. Manveer said, "Mocha is planning to erect double glazing across all the windows to the restaurant, apart from the top, due to its position as a listed building. We have not applied for any live music either, It's just recorded music for now. Our plans are to have jazz in the evening, songs that set ambience and background music, and we can easily reduce the noise of music in the future. District Councillor for St Peter's, Jackie Taylor, criticised the applicant's lack of consultation with neighbours after it was revealed that only a public survey was done without individual discussion with nearby residents. I think it's indicative of the attitude and concern of the applicant, and I would give limited weight to what is being said now, the councillor said. The plans are either naive and poorly formed or deceptive, Mr. Lovell concluded. They have no consideration for the nature of their peers or their neighbours. Meanwhile, Ms. Cameron closed by emphasising their willingness and openness to working with the local community. A decision will be made following the discussion of the councillors.
Hello, I'm Gilly. Remarkable duo overcome life-changing surgery. Two St Albans youngsters have overcome life-changing surgery to raise money in a walking half marathon while forming a remarkable friendship. Mason Day and Molly Wegenet are the same age and grew up attending schools just minutes apart, but they would not be brought together until life threw a curveball. The pair participated in the St Albans Walking Half Marathon in June, raising over £2,600 for the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital, RNOH in brackets. In October 2024, 18-year-old Mason Day underwent spinal surgery at RNOH in Stanmore for scoliosis and kyphosis, conditions that were affecting not only his health, but his confidence and enjoyment of everyday life. He did not know it at the time, but that spell in hospital would lead to an amazing coincidence and a new path. A grateful Mason remembers, Mr. Lachowski and his team made everything possible, and I owe them a debt of gratitude. Those who looked after me in the high dependency unit whilst I was trying to recover from spinal surgery, with pneumonia as well, were incredibly kind and very skilled. Important mention to my anaesthetist too, who went the extra mile to ensure I felt comfortable during my time. Mason has recovered well since his life-changing operation. He said, "I am 2 inches taller. It has made me feel more confident in myself. The pain is much less now than it was a year ago, and all of this has contributed to a much happier feeling in my daily life." In return, to show his support for the hospital, Mason decided to take part in the St Albans event with Molly. They were the same age, having the same surgery, at the same time, coming from the same hometown, and having gone to schools just minutes apart. Mason added, "Molly and I met at the hospital when we were both leaving. We were discharged on the same day. Our parents met at the hospital and soon found out we were from the same city. Our former sixth forms were close by and we had the same surgery a day apart. Since then, we've been really good friends and we even do similar day jobs now. We had been discussing for a while about something we could do to give back to RNOH for helping us. This marathon in our city was obviously the best opportunity to do that. To show your support, visit www.justgiving.com/team/Mason-and-Molly.
Hello, I'm Michelle. And my first article today is entitled, "Pub Reopens with a New Look." A pub in St Albans has reopened with a new look following a 3-week refurbishment, now featuring a fresher, modern design. The Three Hammers in Chiswell Green has undergone a complete transformation, a revamped open plan bar, stylish soft furnishing, enlarged dining space, and refreshed beer garden, which can seat up to 150 guests, are just some of the changes that have been made, as well as an updated menu. Ren Bernardo, general manager, said, "We are delighted to invite both our regulars and new visitors to experience the fresh new look of the Three Hammers, while still enjoying the familiar, cosy atmosphere that makes our pub special. Four-legged friends are also welcome at the Three Hammers, as the pub is dog-friendly."
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Briggs, and my first story is headlined, "Teachers Proud as Jubilant Pupils Celebrate Exceptional A-Level Results." And there's a lovely picture of loads of girls looking extremely happy. Students across St Albans and Harpenden collected their A-Level, T-Level and BTEC results last Thursday with plenty of pride to go around. At Roundwood Park in Harpenden, head teacher Alan Henschel said, "We are proud of every single student, regardless of what path they may be taking next. They have achieved excellent results from very different starting points. I want to pay tribute to the amazing staff of Roundwood Park School, who have worked with them and been with them every step of the way, and also the parents and carers who have supported the school and the students. I hope everybody enjoys celebrating their success." Meanwhile, Oaklands College marked its first set of T-level results with a 100% pass rate. "This is a proud moment for Oakland," said Jacqueline Page, Deputy Principal, Curriculum Performance and Student Experience. "With a pass rate of 100%, our first T-level cohort has set the standard for future learners. These students exemplify the future of vocational education, merging academic study with industry placements." Oaklands also celebrated individual student success. Tunde Saka achieved 3 A-levels with an A in psychology, which will enable him to do a higher apprenticeship in accounting. Independent Senior School, St Albans School, announced a quarter of all results achieved were grade A star, while an impressive 86% of all results were graded A star to B. A talented 44% of A-level students achieved at least one A-star grade across all of their subjects, demonstrating phenomenal aptitude, with many doing far better. Joe Sylvester, headmaster at St Albans School, said, "I'm so delighted for our Year 13 students. They have shown great resilience, courage and focus over recent months, and they've met every challenge with passion and determination. This year we have seen our students excel in their A-level results, with many achieving the highest possible grades." Students at Sandringham School enjoyed a morning of celebration too. Head teacher Alan Gray expressed pride in the cohort's success, saying, "We are thrilled with this year's outcomes. Over 290 students achieved highly, with many securing truly exceptional results. The vast majority have gained places at their first-choice university or apprenticeship. It was wonderful to see them celebrating together and looking forward to the next stage of their journeys." St Columba's College announced another set of exceptional A-level results. The 2025 cohort have exceeded last year's record-breaking figures, increasing the percentage of entries achieving A-star to A-grades to 41.3%. Headmaster Mr Carl Guest said, "I am filled with pride to see the tremendous success of our young people and yet another record-breaking year for St Columba's College. These students and their teachers have worked so hard to achieve these outstanding results, and I am proud to say this is what first-rate holistic education looks like. Happy and successful students heading towards their bright futures."
Hi. This is Liz. My first reading today is about the exceptional results of the A-level students around St Albans. The head teacher at St Albans High School for Girls expressed her pride on the A-level results day 2025. Anne Massey told the Hearts Ad, "We are so proud of the class of 2025 who have earned outstanding A-level results. We are delighted that their efforts have been so richly rewarded." Some individual successes include Maya, Abigail, Amy, Charlotte, Heidi, Harriet, Sadie, Chloe and Tricia, who all achieved 4 A-star grades. Alice, Imogen, Romy, Anushka and Ella, who all achieved at least 3 A-star grades. Samuel Ryder Academy announced its best ever set of sixth form results. This year, students achieved the highest number of A and A-star grades, leading to destinations spanning the top Russell Group universities. Individual successes include Amy, who secured a highly competitive place to study medicine and surgery, and Lila, who achieved an outstanding set of results with 3 A grades. Kyle Barry, head of school, said, "We are incredibly proud of this year's cohort. Their resilience, aspiration, and academic ability have been exceptional. And today's results show just how far our determined young people go when supported by our passionate and expert team." Nicholas Breakspear Catholic School was delighted with the success of the Year 13 A-Level and BTEC students, the vast majority of whom will be taking up places in their first choice of university or apprenticeship. The school's track record of academic excellence continues, with students surpassing last year's results and achieving 84% A-star C and 55% A-star B grades. Head teacher Declan Linane said, "We are proud of all our students who have worked so hard, demonstrated such positive attitudes to learning, and played an active part in the MBS community." Townsend School said it is very proud of each and every one of its students. Top performers include Henry, Anya, Amelia, Louis, Tiffany, Mohammed, Toby, Precious and Eba. Head of sixth form, Mark Tominay, said, "It's wonderful to see so many students making fantastic progress over their 2 years in our sixth form. We are proud that our students have set great foundations for their next steps in their lives. Well done to all." Head teacher Anthony Flack added, "Congratulations to all the students who worked so hard to achieve these results." Leaders at St Albans Girls' School have said that they are immensely proud of the outstanding accomplishments STAG's students have celebrated. Among many notable successes, including over 20 students who achieved all A stars and A's, congratulations go to Alice, who is going to read classics at Cambridge, Naya and Temi, who have secured places to read medicine, and Julia, who will read veterinary science. Head teacher Paul Kershaw said, "All today's incredible achievements are so richly deserved. We send huge congratulations to all students and have every confidence that they will thrive in whatever paths they choose. Their successes are a testament not only to their own efforts, but also to the unwavering support of parents and the dedication of STAG staff."
St George's School in Harpenden celebrated a record-breaking year of A-level results, with more than half of all grades either A-star or A. The results reflect the determination and talent of its students, alongside the expertise and dedication of its teaching staff, a spokesperson said. The vast majority of students have secured their first choice universities or accessed other pathways into further education and employment. Head teacher Andy Ford said, "We are incredibly proud of our students' achievements this year. The results are amazing and a credit to the ambition, commitment and dedication of our students and staff. Each of them has worked incredibly hard to reach this point, and it is inspiring to see them moving on to such a wide variety of exciting futures." There were tears of joy at Marlborough Science Academy on Results Day. Head teacher Annie Thompson said, "Once again our young people have done themselves proud and achieved some exceptional results. In a world that can sometimes seem tough for young people, seeing wide smiles, tears of relief and happy parents make it all seem worthwhile. Special thanks must go to fabulous teaching staff and, of course, parents who do so much hard work behind the scenes. Beaumont School students received a record-breaking number of A-star grades this year. Head teacher Martin Atkinson congratulated students and their teachers on their success across a wide curriculum. I am proud that in a year in which Ofsted has confirmed Beaumont's status as an outstanding school in all areas, our students have matched that with another set of outstanding results. Joanna Tolley, head of sixth form, added, "We welcome many new students to join our sixth form each year, making us one of the largest in the local area, and I am delighted that their achievements make us one of the most successful sixth forms nationally." Students at Verulam School in St Albans received their results and are excited to have secured their places at university, college or apprenticeships. Special mention to head boy Robert Evershed, who achieved A-star grades in mathematics and further maths, and A grades in chemistry and physics, and is going to University of Bath to study mathematics. School captain Henry Gaskin achieved straight A grades in English literature, history and politics, and is going to University of Bristol to study history and politics. Head teacher Fergal Moan said, "Sixth form study is demanding, and I am delighted that the hard work of our students has been rewarded with success. The vast majority secured their preferred destinations and will be studying or undertaking apprenticeships at prestigious institutions all over the UK. I'd like to say how proud we are of them, and we wish them every success." Sir John Law's school in Harpenden was another school to mark a record-breaking year for results. The school community is thrilled with the academic success, which reflects the hard work, resilience and dedication of both students and staff. Head teacher Mr. Philip Newbury praised the cohort, saying, "We are incredibly proud of our students, not only for their exceptional results, but for the way they have conducted themselves throughout their time in the sixth form. They have been true role models, showing leadership, kindness and integrity every step of the way." And there's a lovely picture of some very happy students at Sir John Law's.
Acclaimed beer writer's new book, Celebrating City's Remarkable Pubs. And before I start reading this article, it's accompanied by a lovely photo of Roger Protts with his new book Ale City, sitting in one of St Albans pubs, I couldn't figure out which one it was, with a lovely pint of ale beside him. A beer writer and St Albans legend has published a book celebrating the remarkable pubs of the city. Ale City, St Albans Beer History and Remarkable Pubs was released on August the 15th and is an all-you-need-to-know guide of the area, written by Roger Protts with photographs by Will Lewis. Roger has lived, worked and drunk in St Albans for 50 years. Packed with anecdotes and fascinating facts, the Hearts Advertiser beer columnist explores the city's pubs and brewing heritage in this illustrated novel. The writer was delighted to be releasing the new book and highlighting the history of pub culture he is proud to be part of. He said, "A standout fact I learnt while researching the book is that it seems Romans brewed their own beer," he said. "All the aristocrats were drinking wine, but fascinatingly, soldiers would drink beer. I'm sure it would have been strong stuff." When asked about his favourite pubs in the city, Roger praised the Boot and the Farrier's Arms for their ambience and great beer selection. St Albans is a city rich in history, with its origins of the Iron Age and known as Verulamium following the Roman conquest in AD 43. Much of that history is enshrined in its amazing pubs, which include old coaching inns, a pub where soldiers fighting in the War of the Roses relaxed with ale, and Ye Old Fighting Cocks, one of Britain's oldest inns, dating from the 11th century and possibly even earlier. Pubs connected to the railway age opened in the 19th century, and there have been further additions in both the 20th and 21st centuries. These include the Farrier's Arms, where the longest surviving branch of the Campaign for Real Ale was formed in the 1970s. Today, St Albans has 50 pubs, more per square mile than any other town or city in Britain. Commercial brewing was established in the city during the 17th century, with the Kinder family opening the St Albans Brewery on Checker Street. Their history and that of more recently founded breweries are documented within this new book. Roger is a renowned writer on beer and pubs, with work in the Evening Standard and the Hearts Advertiser. He also won the Gold Award British Guild of Beer Writers 2020. He has written more than 20 books, including the best-selling 300 Beers to Try Before You Die and The Family Brewers of Britain.
MP calls for action to compensate drivers' missold car finance. Harpenden MP Victoria Collins is calling for urgent action to compensate drivers' missold car finance. The Liberal Democrat MP for Harpenden and Berkhamsted is urging the government and financial regulators to establish a compensation scheme following a Supreme Court judgment that found some car finance commissions to be unfair. The ruling has raised the possibility of payouts for consumers who were charged inflated interest rates through discretionary commission arrangements, where dealers could increase rates and receive higher commissions as a result. Ms. Collins said, "It's absolutely vital that any consumer who was unfairly ripped off through eye-watering unfair commission or on car finance deals gets the compensation they are owed." Following the pivotal Supreme Court ruling last week, we Liberal Democrats are urging the government and financial watchdog to work together to make this happen and secure access to compensation without delay. We need to put an end to lenders getting away with this, and Liberal Democrats will keep holding the government to account on doing so. On August the 3rd, the Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, announced plans to begin consulting on a compensation scheme in early October. The FCA said that if the scheme is approved, payments could start in 2026.
Dilys celebrates 105th birthday, and there's a lovely photograph of Dilys Halibone with her family and a huge 105 of those blow-up balloon things. The family is son Hugh, daughter Gwyneth, Councillor Kirsty Wen, daughter-in-law Margaret, and Dilys. A Harpenden woman has marked an incredible milestone, celebrating her 105th birthday, surrounded by loved ones, well-wishers, and a few very special guests. On Friday, August the 8th, Dilys Halibone was surrounded by family, friends, and special guests at Willow Court Care Home in Alderwick Bury Crescent, Harpenden. The Deputy Mayor of Harpenden, Councillor Kirsty Wen, attended the celebration, presenting her with a bouquet of flowers and a box of chocolates. Dilys was also thrilled to receive a birthday card from the King and Queen. Born on August the 8th, 1920, in Cardiff, she is the daughter of Frank, a marine engineer and merchant seaman from Gibraltar. She grew up in Robina, Cardiff, with her younger brother Philip, before moving to Barry and then Fishguard. She completed her schooling and began working for the Bank of England. Dilys was evacuated from London during the Second World War and married George Halibone in 1941. She joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, WAAF or WAF, as a meteorologist, putting her skills in maths and physics to use. Stationed at an airbase in Eastbourne, she survived a bombing raid, escaping by abseiling out of a window, despite never having done so before. She was later evacuated again. After the war, she and George moved to Oxford, where George completed his degree and Dilys studied fine art and printmaking. They had five children and finally settled in Harpenden in the early 1960s. They enjoyed George's retirement until he died in 1996. A talented painter and printmaker, Dilys has exhibited her work widely. She was a local guide leader, a dedicated member of All Saints Church, and is known for her flower arrangements. She has family in Gibraltar and the USA. Willow Court manager Coney Anang said, "Dilys is a truly extraordinary woman whose life has been filled with adventure, creativity and love. It was an honour to celebrate her 105th birthday here at Willow Court and to see her surrounded by so many people who care about her." Son Hugh and his wife Margaret said it was lovely to see her enjoying the attention. Although very frail, she retains her intellect, memory and sense of humour.
Road set to be used for filming. A road in Radley is set to be used for filming later this month. Loom Lane will welcome camera crews on Saturday, August 30, for an unknown production. Traffic restrictions are set to be in place between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. with a stop-and-go system for all road users. Our area has become a hotspot for filming over the last few years, most notably at Warner Brothers Studios Leeds. A big production taking place there is for HBO's upcoming television adaptation of Harry Potter, while Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman have also been at the studios to film Practical Magic 2. Elsewhere, the former Watford police station was used to capture scenes for hit Netflix show Adolescence and ITV drama Code of Silence, starring Rose Isling, Ellis and Charlotte Ritchie, was also filmed at the building as well as multiple locations in St Albans.
Another great production by OVO. The 1920s, with all its hedonism and excess, has roared onto the stage at the St Albans Open Air Festival in the latest production from OVO. F. Scott Fitzgerald's masterpiece, The Great Gatsby, has been adapted for the festival at the Roman Theatre of Verulamium by Mark O'Sullivan, and it captures all the sparkle and gaiety of the jazz age as well as its hubris. The tale is told by a group of performers in a cabaret bar who recount the story of Jay Gatsby, his passion for Daisy Buchanan, and his subsequent tragic demise. Only six performers take all the roles, displaying a versatility and the ability to manage quick costume changes, which is not just convincing, but extremely professional. And the result is a magical evening, which soared above Monday's rain and the last-minute demise of the generator to delight the audience, who gave them a standing ovation to the cast and to the brilliant pianist Andrew McCormack, who performs on stage. Directed by Kelly Ann Stewart, this year marks the centenary of the original novel, and this production does Scott Fitzgerald proud. It is a little hard to follow at first because the story is recounted in a bar rather than as it happened, and both writer and director admit that it is notoriously difficult to stage. But that does not detract from the production, because it soon becomes clear what route Mark O'Sullivan has chosen to go down. What is essentially enjoyable about it is the moments of humour, some deliberate, such as three cast members hobby horse back, and others unavoidable in an outdoor setting, such as when a flock of geese fly low overhead. Jonathan Tymon Moss takes the role of Nick Carraway, through whose eyes the story of Gatsby is told. He is the only one to take just a single role, and like the rest of the cast, is excellent whether he's acting, singing or dancing. In their primary roles, Jessica Vickers is a suitably fragile Daisy, with Nathan French as a sharp-suited Gatsby and David Joseph Healy as Tom Buchanan. Monica Sharp as Jordan is the ultimate flapper. She is so looks the part as well as acting it. And Rochelle Jack is the exhibitionist Texas. Her single drum beat alongside Andrew McCormack's playing as the play reaches its sad ending is a mournful backdrop to the tragedy about to ensue. The lights went out a couple of minutes before the very end as the cast were performing their finale, Blue Skies. To their credit, they carried on singing, providing that when the power goes off, the OVO energy burns on. The Great Gatsby runs until Sunday, August the 24th, and tickets can still be had. And the article is accompanied by a lovely photo of the six members of the cast outside in their appropriate costumes at the Green Light Club. They look like they're having the best, very best time.
Three arrested following reports of shoplifting at Waitrose store. Three people have been arrested on suspicion of shoplifting after police stopped a vehicle in St Albans. Officers stopped the car in Porter's Wood just after 6 p.m. on Wednesday, August the 13th. With the assistance of the council's CCTV operators, they were able to locate the vehicle following a call from staff at the Waitrose store in Harpenden reporting a theft. Suspected stolen goods were uncovered inside the vehicle, including cash, chocolate bars, chewing gum, clothing and an electric food mixer. Two women and one man were arrested on suspicion of theft from a shop in connection with incidents on July the 22nd and 23rd and August the 13th. The vehicle was also seized as it was reportedly being driven without insurance, and inquiries continue. Neighbourhood Inspector Paul Carrow said, "I hope this news is reassuring and our officers will continue to work with local shops to help tackle shoplifting." Shoplifting is not a victimless crime, impacting not only the stores and their employees, but also leads to an increase in prices for all. Shoplifting continues to be a priority in the St Albans district.
W.H. Smith faces planning hurdle before store rebrand. Amid a nationwide rebrand, WH Smith in St Albans faces a planning hurdle before changing its shop front. The Marketplace store is one of more than 480 locations becoming TG Jones after the brand's takeover by Modelo Capital in March 2025. Modelo will have to wait for planning permission at the St Albans location, however, due to its status as a listed building. The District Council must decide whether to grant two external signs with new TG Jones branding to the existing windows. A staple of UK town centres since the Victorian era, the WH Smith name will disappear from high streets but remain at airports, railway stations and hospitals. The new owner said it would be business as usual while it worked on making changes to the store chain, including adding new ranges while keeping the Toys R Us concessions and the 195 post office counters. The sale comes after years of under pressure trading at the division, while WH Smith's travel business has grown to make up the bulk of the group's sales and profits, with more than 1,200 stores across 32 countries. WH Smith's half-year results in April showed the profits at the high street chain had slumped by a quarter to just £20 million. Bayer Modella specialises in investing in retailers.
Decline in uptake of adult day centre services. Herts County Council has drafted a strategy to help maintain its adult day centre services amid a decline in uptake among users. The strategy includes objectives such as expanding the offer of daycare services to prevent the need for third-party suppliers, as well as having welcoming, multifunctional buildings and ensuring resilience in the social care system. The document was discussed at the first meeting of the Council's Adult Care Services Cabinet Panel. It revealed that in-house day services provide support to an average of 425 adults a day from 27 sites across the county. Activities focus on well-being and health, social interaction, and developing skills and independence, the report stated. As well as site-based activities, groups regularly travel to venues in the local community and beyond. 904 people are currently registered with the service, including people with learning disabilities, physical disabilities, older people, and people with mental health needs. The report states in recent years the number of people attending in-house day services has steadily declined due to the availability of other options, such as direct payments, where people have access to a budget to purchase their own support or services. Despite this, Herts County Council states it is committed to a continuing day service, as well as developing them to broaden their offer.
Champion Beer Winners, an article on beer news by the acclaimed St Albans beer writer Roger Protts on the Champion Beer of Britain competition. The revival of old British beer styles continues apace. I have mentioned before the ways in which the fortunes of porter and stout have been restored, with Guinness now the top-selling beer, overtaking major lager brands. They have been joined by mild ale and barley wine, both of which picked up major awards at the Great British Beer Festival earlier this month. The festival is staged by St Albans-based CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale. It is now one of the world's major beer jamborees, featuring several hundred cask beers from Britain and further afield. This year's festival was held at the Birmingham National Exhibition Centre, and it included a large selection featuring American beers, indicating a growing interest in real ale across the pond. The highlight of the opening day of the festival is the announcement of the winners of the Champion Beer of Britain competition. The competition takes place over a full year. Local CAMRA branches choose their top beers, which go forward to regional competitions. The winners are then judged on the opening day of the beer festival by a panel of expert tasters. All the tastings are blindfold. This year's champion beer was Penzance Mild from the Penzance Brewing Company, based in the Star Inn in Crowlas, 3 miles from the town. Mild ale was once a major beer style of these islands. It rose to popularity in the 18th and 19th centuries, when drinkers moved away from porter and stout and switched their allegiance to a less hoppy and bitter beer. Unlike porter and stout, which were aged in wood for several months, mild was quickly brewed and was slightly sweeter as fewer hops were used. It was popular with industrial and farm workers who wanted refreshment after 18 hours long slog in factories, mines and fields. It remained the dominant beer style until the 1950s, when younger drinkers thought mild was old hat and switched to paler beers, including the first lagers brewed in this country. Mild survived, but hung on by its fingertips. Brewers who remain true to the style include our local McCullen of Hertford, whose delicious AK Light Mild was judged Champion Beer of Hertfordshire and St Albans Beer Festival last year. Penzance Mild is 3.6% and, for a relatively low-strength beer, has a complex recipe of pale chocolate brown and black malts. The hops are two English varieties, Fuggles and Goldings. It has a rich aroma and a palate of coffee, chocolate and roasted grain, with a good underpinning of spicy hops. The runner-up in the competition was Snowflake, an 8% barley wine from another pub brewery, Sarah Hughes, in the Beacon Hotel in Sedgley in the West Midlands. In the 18th and 19th centuries, when England was often at war with France, patriotic Brits wouldn't touch imported French wine and called on brewers to produce beers that matched wine in strength. It was a style that went out of favour in the 20th century. But just as brewers both here and in the US have revived the likes of India Pale Ale, they have also turned their attention to barley wine. Snowflake has a simple recipe of Maris Otter Pale Malt and Fuggles and Goldings hops. The beer has a rich and rewarding aroma and a palate of biscuit and honey malt, underscored by spicy and peppery hops, along with a big kick of alcohol. In April, the Chiltern Brewery produced a special version of their Bodgers barley wine in my honour, called Rogers Bodgers. That's almost ready for the tasting. So, as they say, watch this space.
Husband and wife folk music duo Friction Farm is set to perform at Redbourne Folk Club. Friction Farm, made up of Aidan Quinn and Christine Stay from North Carolina, will perform at the club on Wednesday, September the 24th at 7:30 p.m. as part of their UK tour. The couple, known for merging storytelling, social commentary and humour into their music, aim to create songs that resonate with everyday life, heroes and unique observations ranging from ballads to anthems. Their songs have previously earned them accolades such as Kerrville New Folk Finalists in Texas, Falcon Ridge Emerging Artists in New York, and winners of the South Florida Folk Festival Songwriter Competition. Friction Farm's latest tour is to support their new album, Stone by Stone. The album, which they describe as being inspired by the recognition that ordinary people can make a difference in a chaotic world, is filled with songs that call on listeners to take bold action. Songs include the Phil Ochs-inspired opener, Louder Than Guns, and the upbeat folk pop, Spread a Little Sunshine. Other tracks include Every Drop of Rain, American Dream, and Everything Will Be All Right. Stone by Stone is a more stripped-down album compared to their previous work, but Friction Farm say it is deeper and richer. More details about Friction Farm and their music can be found at www.frictionfarm.com, and there's a lovely picture of the pair of them.
Cathedral to host premiere of St Albans Mystery Plays, and there's a lovely photograph of five musicians all dressed in medieval gear and playing presumably medieval instruments. Harry Potter director Mike Newell will open the evening. A world premiere is set to take place in the historic nave of St Albans Cathedral. The St Albans Mystery Plays, written in verse by Imogen de la Bear, will be performed on Friday, November the 7th, beginning at 7 p.m. These plays continue a medieval tradition of storytelling that once brought biblical tales to life for audiences who could not understand Latin church services. Imogen de la Bear, a lay minister at St Saviour's Church in St Albans, said, "I've been working on plays based around St Albans characters for some time, starting with Boudica at Verulamium in 2014, the first play put on in the Roman theatre since Roman times. The production will feature four scenes from the Bible, the creation, Mr and Mrs Noah, the crucifixion and the final judgment. The plays will be staged in St Albans Cathedral's nave, much as they were nearly 800 years ago." Hazel Arson, producer of the St Albans Mystery Plays, said, "It's going to be a wonderful evening." The Hollywood director, Mike Newell, a former chorister at the cathedral, will open the evening with words of welcome and a potted history of mystery plays. The performance will include medieval dancers and musicians. Actors from across the district and the cathedral community will take part. Stephen De Silva, one of three cast to play God, said, "God needs to be mysterious, majestic, kind and relatable. Quite a tall order, but I'm working on it." David Bevan, who plays Lucifer, said, "Usually in mystery plays there's a fair degree of humour to undermine the dark side, so hopefully Lucifer won't be too scary or hateful. More a figure of ridicule." Anna MacLeod Franklin will play Eve and said, "Eve is so often reduced to a symbol of temptation and sin, but I try to approach her as a real human being who faces the complexity of choice." The event is organised by the Friends of St Albans Cathedral to raise awareness and recruit new members.
New Italian Deli set to open in city. A Touch of La Dolce Vita is coming to St Albans as an Italian eatery is set to open in the heart of the city. Barriccio, a modern Italian delicatessen and wine bar, is opening its doors this September at 12 Hollywell Hill, formerly home to Headcase Barbers. Combining authentic flavours with contemporary flair, Barriccio promises to be a vibrant hub for Italian food lovers and wine enthusiasts alike. The deli will offer roasted specialty coffee in the morning, along with sweet treats and gourmet focaccia sandwiches at lunch. In the evening, Thursday to Saturday, Barriccio will turn into a cosy neighbourhood wine bar with a regularly changing blackboard menu of seasonal platters and dishes. Barriccio's wine list will feature a range of bottles from small Italian producers that champion sustainable and ethical practice in their vineyards. Works are firmly underway to transform the unit into a well-curated, minimalistic interior that transports visitors to the elegance and romance of Italian holidays. From early September, the shop's soft opening hours are Thursday to Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then from October, these will change, becoming Monday to Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m.
And now for Jasmine Birtle's Money Magpie. Treat yourself for under £50. Whether you've been on childminding duty during the school holidays for the grandchildren, busy keeping up with a full-on social life, or simply are feeling overwhelmed by the state of the world, it's easy to forget to take time for yourself. We're all feeling a little frazzled these days, but taking a small moment for yourself each day will help you cope with a busy or stressful life. I've found some small pick-me-up and free ideas for you to get a little me time and bring a smile to your face, even on a frantic day. Firstly, free pick-me-up ideas. Let's start with the no-budget things. Check out a free trial, such as Readly, which gives you 2 months' access to thousands of magazine and newspaper titles, including back issues. Through these, you could learn a new hobby by reading a specialist magazine or catch up on the celebrity gossip in the weeklies. Pop to your local library or sign up for a library card online too. As well as books and e-books, you can borrow audiobooks, board games, DVDs and more. If you can't wait for the audiobook you want from the library, try a free trial with BookBeat or Spotify or Audible, but do remember to cancel the trials before they renew. If you feel too busy to find time for yourself, try to build it into your day. Do you need to pop to the shops? Park further away or get off the bus a little sooner to have that extra 10-minute walk. Need to catch up with a friend but haven't time to visit? Pop some headphones in and chat on the phone while you fold the laundry or tidy the house or walk the dog. Me time can mean multitasking. And next, self-care treats under £20. While a healthy diet is important, the occasional treat can be all you need to feel better. Get a fancy box of chocolates or luxury chocolate bar, like one from Melt London, and savour each bite. Or, if you can, look for an alcohol-free spirit or wine to enjoy a cocktail, or a taste of wine with dinner but without the hangover. Sometimes even reaching for the nice brand of your favourite food can be all it takes. Go on, treat yourself to that steak for dinner now and then. Use a discount coupon site like Groupon or Woucher to find a beauty treatment offer near you, like a massage, a manicure or a haircut. You could ask at your local beauty college about being a model for students, then you'd get free or cheap treatments. Now is a great time for seasonable sales too. So if you've been after a new item of clothing but haven't felt like you could treat yourself at full price, do a little shopping round to see if you can pick up a bargain. And do remember, charity shops are a fab way to find new or almost new items on a tighter budget too. And next, cozy up. The middle of summer might not be when you're thinking about slippers, but you'd be surprised how a little luxury on your feet can boost your early morning and your bedtime routines. Heavenly Feet Fireside Slippers are fleece-lined, and it's like wrapping your feet in a hug. Making your home smell inviting is also a brilliant way to wind down, even if it seems like there's a whirlwind around you. And finally, mindful time. Take some mindful time for projects away from technology for a mini digital detox each week. This could be starting a new hobby like knitting, crochet or woodwork project. Or maybe you'd like colouring, painting or other art activities. Active mindfulness can include participating in a yoga or Pilates class, or even spending time with friends or family playing a board game, a card game or even building a Lego set together. Try a new class or go to an event in your area. Check out skiddle.com as it's a great resource for local event listings.
Farmers call for stronger action after tons of waste fly-tipped. Farmers in Hertfordshire have highlighted the devastating impact of fly-tipping during a meeting with police leaders and MPs after 200 tons of waste was dumped on a farm in St Albans. The National Farmers Union, in brackets NFU, organised the meeting to push the need for an urgent shake-up of the way the crime is dealt with and make clear how industrial-scale fly-tipping is being carried out by organised criminal gangs on a regular basis in Hertfordshire. Discussions were held just weeks after 40 lorry loads of waste was dumped on a St Albans farm in an incident which has attracted widespread media attention. The rubbish included asbestos, cannabis waste, timber and office furniture. With farmers and landowners legally responsible for clearing waste dumped on private land, the farmer could be facing a bill of more than £40,000, which he described as devastating. NFU member and arable farmer Will Dickinson hosted the roundtable meeting at his farm near St Albans. He said this was an important opportunity to put the issue of fly-tipping clearly under the spotlight. Fly-tipping is a huge issue in Hertfordshire, damaging the environment, seriously disrupting farmers' work, and costing farmers tens of thousands of pounds in clear-up costs. It is a complete travesty of justice that farmers and landowners, who are the victims of the crime, are liable for the clear-up costs and could themselves face prosecution if they do not clear up the mess. Very few fly-tipping incidents result in prosecutions, and when people are convicted, they often receive a fine which amounts to less than the cost of hiring a skip. The whole system needs looking at to address the seriousness of this crime. Hertfordshire Police and Crime Commissioner Jonathan Ash Edwards, Sergeant Alex Winning from Hertfordshire Constabulary's Rural Operational Support Team, Deputy Leader of the Liberal Democrats and MP for St Albans, Daisy Cooper, MP for Harpenden and Berkhamsted, Victoria Collins, NFU Hertfordshire Chair, Robert Law, and Widford Parish Council Leader, Ian Collins, were among those in attendance, along with representatives from the Environment Agency. During the meeting, held as part of the NFU's ongoing lobbying work with all political parties, members described frustrations over ineffective reporting systems and the need for a consistent joined-up approach from authorities responsible for dealing with the crime. The NFU is calling for further collaboration between land managers, local authorities, police and the Environment Agency to establish ownership of the issue, improve investigations and ensure fines are proportionate. Authorities and the police to assist land managers in the clean-up and reporting of fly-tipped material. Proactive prevention, such as stop-and-search highway initiatives with the police and the DVSA asking for waste carriers' licences and waste transfer notes. A single reporting mechanism to be developed so farmers and land managers only have to report a fly-tipping incident once. PCC Jonathan Ash Edwards labelled fly-tipping a blight on our countryside and reminded that police regularly run operations with other agencies to proactively check vehicles and disrupt fly-tippers. He said, "My fly-tipping grant scheme is one of the only initiatives in the country to help private landowners with clear-up costs and prevention measures. There is much more that needs to be done, including an increase in local authority prosecutions and tougher consequences for waste criminals."
Orchestra set to celebrate its 50th anniversary, and a photograph of the orchestra with instruments. An orchestra is set to celebrate its 50th anniversary with a concert in St. Albans. The Amadeus Chamber Orchestra will hold the performance at St. Saviour's Church on September the 27th at 7:30 p.m. Formed in 1975, the orchestra has a consistent membership of talented players from the local area who are known for producing music of the highest quality. They will be celebrating half a century of performing with a special concert where conductor emeritus Simon Thompson will return to lead the orchestra. The concert will begin with Mendelssohn's Hebrides Overture, a work which Simon conducted at his first concert with the orchestra in January 1989. Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 4 will feature Jana Hunica, principal flautist, and two of the same soloists who performed this work with the orchestra in 2006. These two soloists are Judith Bowman, former principal flautist, and Jennifer Wigram, who has been the leader of Amadeus since 1996. The concert will close with Beethoven's joyous Symphony No. 4, which has been performed by the orchestra on numerous occasions. There will be pre-concert drinks at 6:45 p.m. on the day of the concert to celebrate the occasion.
St. Albans marks VJ Day with ceremony. A ceremony was held in St. Albans to mark the 80th anniversary of Victory over Japan Day. The event on Friday was led by St. Albans Mayor Councillor Teresa Heritage at the War Memorial. She was joined by councillors, honorary aldermen and senior council officers to remember the end of the Second World War and pay their respects to the fallen. They were also joined by veterans from the British Royal Legion and representatives from the Burma Star Association. A proclamation was read by town criers Stephen Potter to honour the courage of those who perished in the conflict in the Far East. Reverend Vanessa Jefferson, minor canon presenter at St Albans Cathedral, led prayers and a two-minute silence at midday. After the ceremony, Councillor Heritage said, "It's a great honour to lead the district's commemoration of VJ Day 80. I am very thankful to all those who took the time and trouble to attend the service, and it was pleasing to see so many of our residents there. It was our community's way of coming together to remember the suffering and courage of all those who fought against the Japanese in Burma, Malaysia, Singapore and Hong Kong. We shall never forget."
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, August 23rd. The drama is Faith Healer by Brian Friel, Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Saturday afternoon. Animal Farm is George Orwell's own dramatisation of his 1945 novella, Radio 4 Extra at 5. The BBC Proms continue all week, programming every evening. Saturday's live performance includes Mahler's Fifth Symphony, Radio 3, 8 p.m. And Voices from the Bog explores the story behind the two 2,000-year-old bodies found in a Cheshire peat bog and the world they lived in. Celtic Britain under Roman colonial occupation. Radio 4, Saturday night, 9 o'clock. Sunday, August 24th, and 35 years after the reunification of East and West Germany, Germany united and divided, here's how people in the East resent government intrusion from Berlin and feel underrepresented in all spheres of German life. Radio 4, Sunday afternoon, 1:30. Treasure Island is a musical reimagining of Robert Louis Stevenson's novel on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. 100 Years of the Shipping Forecast brings us highlights of a special BBC Proms performance of music and readings inspired by the oceans and the elements, Radio 4 at 5 p.m. And All Passion Spent is an adaptation of Vita Sackville-West's 1931 novel in which an 88-year-old woman defies her children and embarks on an independent life following the death of her husband. Radio 4 Extra, Sunday evening, 7:50. On to programmes then that are serialised right throughout the week at the same time every day. Same radio station, same time every day, Monday to Friday next week. In On the Beach, five different presenters take us to their favourite beaches. Radio 4 Extra, 9:30 in the morning, Monday to Friday. The Memoirs of Sherlock Holmes brings us five short stories on Radio 4 Extra at 6 in the morning, 11 in the morning or 5 p.m. every day this week. Bloodlands follows the investigation into the 2016 murders of two South African farm workers, a case that prompted street protests and threats of violence, as well as dividing the small town of Paris along racial lines. Radio 4, 11:45 in the morning, Monday to Friday. A new series of Nature Bang examines the science behind phenomena in the natural world. Radio 4, Monday to Friday, 1:45 p.m. In Hollywood, in the Adland 5, director Sir Christopher Nolan and cultural historian Sir Christopher Frayling look at the impact of five British film directors. Radio 4, each night, 7:15. While Book of Bedtime continues the reading of Crooked Cross by Sally Carson. Radio 4, 10:45, Monday to Friday, all week. On to the individual programmes then to listen to through the week, starting with Bank Holiday Monday, August 25th. And as it is a Bank Holiday Monday, there's a special Proms Marathon, a feast of programmes featuring a pick of this year's BBC Proms so far. Programmes start on Radio 3 at 9:30 on Monday morning and continue right through till 10 p.m. Classic FM has its own 10-hour marathon as it counts down the Movie Music Hall of Fame. Classic FM, 10 a.m. on Monday. An edition of Witness History from 2015 celebrates the history of the Guinness Book of Records on Radio 4 Extra at 10:20 on Monday morning or 4:20 in the afternoon. A Charles Paris mystery on Bank Holiday Monday, So Much Blood, another of Simon Brett's comic detective stories starring Bill Nighy as the actor turned amateur sleuth. Radio 4 Extra at 3 in the afternoon or 9 p.m. And in the series 1-to-1, writer and performer Malaika Kagode talks to the Reverend Paul Cowley, who was a prisoner and then a soldier before becoming a priest. Radio 4, Monday night, 9:45. Tuesday, August 26th, and drama Rise by Lorna French. Radio 4 for this on Tuesday afternoon. A 15-year-old black bridge girl living in care finds inner strength from looking at and learning from her past, including an unexpected link to some of the pioneers of gospel music. Rise by Lorna French, Radio 4's drama, at 2:15 on Tuesday afternoon. Composer of the week this week, Domenico Scarlatti, 1685-1757. Radio 3, 4 o'clock, all week from Tuesday. To mark the 80th anniversary of Animal Farm's publication, The Farmer's Guide to Animal Farm seeks out a new perspective by asking whether George Orwell's political satire should instead be viewed as a book about farming. Radio 4, Tuesday afternoon at 4. Polly Toynbee examines how war informed the vision of her grandfather, historian Arnold Toynbee, in Toynbee at War. Radio 4 Extra at 4:30 p.m. As it's Tuesday, Peter White presents his regular programme In Touch on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m, the latest news for those that are blind and partially sighted. And the subject of Crossing Continents this week is a new immigration detention centre in the Florida swampland, following an immigration lawyer as he attempts to meet his client there. Radio 4, 9 p.m. for Crossing Continents. Wednesday, August 27th, and da-da-da-da! Described as a riotous tour of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Radio 4 Extra, 10 a.m. or 4 p.m. on Wednesday. Sorry about the singing. Choral Evensong, much better singing, comes from Eddington Priory Church on Wednesday afternoon on Radio 3 at 3. The Hidden History of the Wall asks what walls can reveal about how people live, from Iron Age roundhouses to Victorian mansions. Radio 4, Wednesday, 3:30 p.m. In the series Human Intelligence, Teachers, Michael Faraday, considers the chemist and physicist who made breakthroughs in the understanding of electricity, changed the technology by which people live, and contributed to our theoretical understanding of the forces underpinning the universe. Radio 4, 4 p.m. And the BBC Proms brings a performance at the Royal Albert Hall by the Glyndebourne Festival Opera of Mozart's Marriage of Figaro. Wednesday evening, Radio 3, 6:30. Thursday, August 28th. In a new series, How to Play, the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra invites listeners into their rehearsals as they prepare for a performance of Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique. A Radio 4, 9:30, Thursday morning. In the Holton Players, Jim Broadbent explores the Lincolnshire Theatre Company, formed by conscientious objectors to the Second World War. Radio 4 Extra, 10:30 in the morning, or 4:30 in the afternoon on Thursday. A new series of Doe, discussing the trends shaping what today's technology might look like tomorrow, begins by looking at the future of cars. Radio 4, 12:30. Open Country is exploring the lakes by wheelchair, trying out a scheme that helps disabled people across and access the Lake District. Radio 4, 3 p.m. And Radical with Amal Rajan offers his take on the week's news on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. Finally, Friday, August 29th, and in the inimitable Jeeves, The Great Sermon Handicap is the story on Radio 4 Extra at 7:30 in the morning, 12:30 lunchtime, or 6:30 in the evening. In the first part of Mother Cover, a new serial drama in the Limelight series, Gwen is recruited to spy on another mum in her Aberystwyth baby group. For how long can she keep up the act? Radio 4, 2:15 on Friday afternoon. Any Questions is still on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. on Friday. While the series Around the World in 8 Opera Houses concludes with a look at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden and Glyndebourne, featuring music from Puccini's Tosca and Mozart's Marriage of Figaro again. Around the World in 8 Opera Houses, Classic FM, 9 o'clock on Friday. That's it. Thank you to Wendy for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
Hello, this is Diane, welcoming you to your audio-described TV programmes starting Saturday, 23rd of August and ending 29th of August 2025, which has been written by Christine. So, starting with Saturday, there are foodie treats for early risers with ITV's Ainsley's Good Mood Food at 6 a.m, followed by Cooking with the Stars at 7:30 a.m. On Channel 4, there are 2 episodes of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:50 a.m, followed by a Simpsons triple bill from 10:35 a.m. BBC 2 offers 2 episodes of The Next Step from 8 a.m, followed by more for cookery programme lovers, with 2 episodes of Mary Berry's Simple Comforts at 11:55 and 12:25. Back on ITV, Tom Kerridge Cooks Spain is at 12:40, and on BBC One, Bargain Hunt visits Nottinghamshire at 12:45, whilst the Great British Sewing Bee series continues on BBC Two at 12:55. Your Saturday evening options start at 4:40 on Channel 4, when Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It visits Alberton, whilst BBC One has the last in the current series of Garden Rescue at 5:15, and Channel 4 offers George Clark's Remarkable Renovations at 5:40. The fantasy film Fantastic Beasts: The Crimes of Grindelwald features on ITV at 5 p.m. The sequel follows Grindelwald rallying an army of pureblood wizards to rule over all non-magical beings. BBC 4 gives you The Owls in the Orchard in Britain's Wild Places at 7 p.m, whilst on Channel 4 it's Our Farm Next Door at 7:10, followed by a new series, Bethany Hughes' Lost Worlds at 8:10. The first episode unravels the enigma of the Nabataeans, the influential ancient people who history forgot. BBC One has MasterChef at 7:55, Casualty at 8:25, and the detective series Annika at 9:10, whilst over on ITV, the quiz show The 1% Club is at 8:30, followed by the second episode of Australian drama series One Night at 9:30. Griff Rhys-Jones visits Memphis as he continues his Great American South road trip at 9:10 on Channel 4. And still on 4, your late night film choice is The Northman, an epic Viking saga. BBC 4 has two episodes of The Newsreader from 10:45. And now for Sunday. Ainsley's Good Mood Food is back at 6 a.m. on ITV, and there's a double dose of Everybody Loves Raymond from 8 a.m. on Channel 4, followed by a Frasier double bill from 9. BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11, whilst Love Your Garden is at 12:25 on ITV. Simpsons fans can enjoy three back-to-back episodes on Channel 4 from 1 p.m, whilst David Attenborough's Parenthood series continues on BBC One with episodes at 3:05 and 7:10 p.m. There are three afternoon film options. ITV gives you comedy drama About a Boy at 1:10, followed by James Bond classic Never Say Never Again at 3:05, whilst BBC One offers Ghostbusters 2 at 4:05. Meanwhile, on BBC Two, the team find out why two historic paintings of black British women have soared in value in the Fake or Fortune series at 4:15. And on Channel 4 at 4:55, Grand Designs asks, does good architecture have the power to heal? This features a couple who built a clean-aired, hypoallergenic house motivated by their two sons' extreme allergies. Our Tiny Islands visits a football pitch in Eriskay and salt marshes in Northy Island at 6:30 on Channel 4, followed by a new series, The Castle, Rebuilding History at 7:30, the first episode featuring Norwich Castle. Cooking with the Stars is at 7 p.m. on ITV, followed by episode 3 of detective drama series Ridley at 8. Although not audio described, music lovers might enjoy BBC 4's BBC Proms at 8, a concert from the 2017 Proms to mark the 85th birthday of the film composer John Williams. 9 o'clock choices include BBC 2's Murder Case, The Vanishing Cyclist, and Celebrity SAS, Who Dares Wins on Channel 4. And on BBC 1 at 9:10, there is the start of a new series, King and Conqueror, with the first episode featuring Harold of Wessex and William of Normandy encountering each other for the first time. Oscar-winning film The Godfather is on BBC 2 at 10, and on Channel 4 there's the series finale of spy thriller The Veil at 11:05. Sunday night options conclude at 11:30 on BBC One with the first in the series, Tommy, The Good, The Bad, The Fury, with the boxer planning a comeback after the worst year of his life. Now for the programmes which are on at the same time, same channel, each weekday. There's a double bill of King of Queens from 8:10 a.m. on Channel 4, followed by four episodes of Frasier from 9:10. On BBC One, Animal Park is at 9:30, and on Channel 4, Chateau DIY is at 5 p.m. There are some changes this week to the regular soap slots. Emmerdale at 7:30 on ITV every weeknight, except Wednesday when it's at 7. EastEnders, 7:30 on BBC One every weeknight, except Friday. And Coronation Street, 8 o'clock on Monday, Tuesday and Friday. Now for Bank Holiday Monday. BBC One has Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, and there's a lunchtime film choice on Channel 4 at 12:05 with the comedy action adventure Romancing the Stone. Sir David Attenborough joins archaeologists excavating mammoth remains near Swindon at 2 p.m. on BBC One in Attenborough and the Mammoth Graveyard, whilst on ITV, also at 2, it's Celebrity Catchphrase. A Deal or No Deal celebrity special is on ITV at 4, whilst on BBC Two at 4:15, big cat expert Giles Clark hand-rears a Jaguar cub at home in Big Cats About the House. BBC One's Fake or Fortune is at 6:30, and the Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer is at 7 on Channel 4. Evening options include Planet Earth on BBC Four at 7, followed by Vienna, Empire, Dynasty and Dream at 8. There's a new series on Channel 4 at 8 featuring Chef Jamie Oliver, Eat Yourself Healthy. The first episode features sustainable meatballs, chopped salad and a bubbly berry jelly dessert. Channel 4 then gives you Celebrity SAS at 9, Celebrity Gogglebox at 10 and First Dates at 11:05. Meanwhile, over on BBC Two at 9, there's the first in a three-part series, The Piper Alpha Story, a minute-by-minute account of the world's deadliest oil platform disaster, whilst ITV's detective drama Ridley continues at 9. BBC Four has the last episode of Rise of the Nazis at 9, whilst BBC One has the second episode of King and Conqueror at 9:30. BBC Two has The Godfather Part 2 at 10, whilst BBC Four features The Girl Who Talked to Dolphins again at 10. This evening draws to a close with ITV's Cold Case Forensics at 11:10, which features the murder of Stephen Lawrence and two episodes of This Country on BBC One from 11:15. Now for Tuesday. In the morning, the repair shop team are on the road in the West Midlands in Sign Zone at 8, and in the afternoon, ITV has Celebrity Catchphrase at 2. Evening options start at 7 on BBC Four with Planet Earth, followed at 8 by an episode from 1970s comedy series The Good Life. The repair shop is at 8 on BBC One, followed by The Great British Sewing Bee at 9, whilst on Channel 4 you have The Big Pound Shop Swap at 8, followed by the start of a new series of The Jury Murder Trial at 9. There's a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire celebrity special on ITV at 9, and for fans of Billy Connolly, there's a series of programmes devoted to the Scottish comedian from 9 on BBC 4. Channel 4 examines the brutal murders of the Bamber family in 1985 in White House Farm at 10, followed by Crime Scene Cleaners at 11:05, and Billion Dollar Playground is on BBC One at 10:40. There are two late-night film choices, the James Bond classic Never Say Never Again at 10:45 on ITV and The Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone at 11 on BBC Two. Next, your programmes for Wednesday. Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15 on BBC One. Channel 4 has Car SOS at 1:10 and ITV has Celebrity Catchphrase at 2. In the evening, there is another episode of Planet Earth on BBC Four at 7, followed by What Are UFOs at 8. You can take a grand tour of Scotland's rivers with Paul Merton at 7:30 on BBC Two, followed at 8 by the continuing series following the work of the RNLI in Saving Lives at Sea and the start of a new documentary series, The Great Art Fraud, at 9. BBC One has MasterChef at 8, followed the penultimate episode of Destination X at 9, whilst on Channel 4 you have George Clark's Kitchen versus Garden at 8, followed by the second episode of The Jury Murder Trial at 9. At 10, Channel 4's White House Farm documentary concludes, whilst on BBC Two a new six-part series begins, Limbs in the Lock, Catching a Killer. Night Owls can choose from Miriam Margoyle's Discovers New Zealand at 11 on BBC Two or 24 Hours in A&E at 11:05 on Channel 4 and Heathrow, Britain's busiest airport at 11:10. Now on to Thursday. Gardener's World features in Sign Zone at 8 a.m. on BBC Two and Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:15 on BBC One followed by Bargain Hunt at 12:15. Car SOS is at 1:10 on Channel 4. Celebrity Catchphrase is at 2 on ITV. And there's Big Cats About the House at 4:15 on BBC Two. In the evening, Rick Stein finishes his culinary tour of the UK in Food Stories at 6:30 on BBC Two. Planet Earth continues on BBC Four at 7:15. MasterChef is on BBC One at 8. And there's a brand new series of The Doghouse on Channel 4, again at 8. Tom Kerridge Cooks Spain has its final episode on ITV at 8:30, followed by The Fortune Hotel at 9. Also at 9 o'clock, Destination X has its grand final on BBC One. The Jury Murder Trial continues on Channel 4 and The Great Art Fraud on BBC Two. The Godfather Parts 1 and 2 start from 9 on BBC Four. Channel 4 has First Dates at 10, followed by Gogglebox at 11:05. There's Limbs in the Lock, Catching a Killer at 10 on BBC Two, and two episodes of Tommy, The Good, The Bad, The Fury from 10:40 on BBC One, whilst on BBC Two at 11, the Piper Alpha platform disaster story is told in the first episode of Disaster at Sea. And finally, on to Friday. We have Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15 on BBC One and Car SOS at 1:10 on Channel 4. At 2 o'clock, you have Fern Britton, Inside the Vets on ITV and Sister Boniface Mysteries on BBC One, and The Big Cats About the House are back on BBC Two at 4:15. Your evening choices start with Rick Stein's Cornwall on BBC Two at 6:30, and on BBC One at 7:30, Dave Steele, also known as the Blind Poet, shares how he finds purpose through spoken word poetry in the film I'll never see, Our Lives. You have Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It at 8 on Channel 4, followed by the final episode of The Jury Murder Trial at 9, then the start of a new series, The Jury Australia at 10. At 9 o'clock, it's the final game of The Fortune Hotel on ITV. Miriam Margoyles discovers more New Zealand on BBC Two, and the Jessops go to Malta in BBC One's Here We Go. Mrs Brown's Boys is on BBC One at 9:30, Mammoth is on BBC Two at 10, and two episodes of Romantic Drama Mixtape are on from 10:40 on BBC One. You have three late night film options: action thriller The Taking of Pelham 123 at 10:45 on ITV, the period romantic drama Atonement at 11 on BBC Two, and sci-fi action with Terminator Genesis at 11:20 on Channel 4. Not audio described, but you might enjoy a musical evening on BBC 4, which starts at 7 and runs into the early hours, featuring Top of the Pops episodes from the 80s and 90s, BBC proms, and celebrations of the first ladies of hip-hop. So that's it for this week. We do hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Terry, and here he is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 1. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There are plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either stood up or sitting down, so just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do this exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, for example, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. If remaining seated, at least to begin with, you should have your feet flat on the floor. It would be ideal if you can use a hard chair that you can sit upright in, which could be a dining chair, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. Okay, if you are stood up, just step your feet hip-width apart, relax your shoulders, and stand up nice and tall, and take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet firmly on the floor, keep your back straight, relax your shoulders, and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out, in and out. So, the first exercise is called supporting the sky. Raise both arms together, straight up to the ceiling, with your palms up. Then turn your palms to face down and push down towards the ground. And again. So hands up and hands down and repeat. Remembering to push up with those palms supporting the sky and down. And now keep going. This is a really good exercise just to get those wrists moving, and it stretches the muscles in your arms and shoulders, which can often get a little tight. It's also just a nice, gentle warm-up. So we should have just a couple more now. So hands up, with your palms up, then palms down and hands down, and one more time, hands up and hands down. The next exercise is called dancing the rainbow. So you want to move your feet a little bit wider than hip-width apart, into a wide stance. One arm at a time, you raise your right arm straight up with your palm up and push down towards the ground. Now do the same with the left arm, up and down. And keep going, remembering to turn that palm down on the way down. Keep going, alternating your arms. This is a really good exercise for strengthening those shoulders and arms. Keep going, remembering to change those arms and facing that palm up to the ceiling when you press up, and then palm facing down when you press down. So, the next one is called kick the ball. If you're standing, I recommend you're near something that you can hold onto to help with balance. This could be an armchair, a kitchen chair, or a wall. Standing on your left leg, gently from the hip, swing your right leg forward, keeping it as straight as possible, and then swing it back to standing. So, swing in your right leg and keep repeating that action forward and back. If you are chair-based, straighten out your right leg in front of you, feeling that nice stretch down your leg, then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the same leg. So whether you're sitting or standing, you're just swinging your right leg forward and back, imagining there's a ball in front of you that you want to kick. Do this a couple more times. This is great for mobilizing your hips, stretching your leg, and improving your balance. Now, we're going to do exactly the same for the left leg. So gently swing your leg from the hip, forward and back. Forward and back, keeping that leg nice and straight. You might be starting to feel your heart rate go up a little now. That's great. It's perfectly normal, and it means you are building up your strength. And now a couple more times. We should all be feeling nice and warm now. Next up is the twister. So stand up or sit up tall and keep your back straight with your feet facing forward. place your hands on your hips, relaxing those shoulders, and twist your upper body to the right. Then twist back to the center, and then to the other side. So just keep twisting your upper body from left to right, feeling that nice stretch in your side. And just keep going for a few more times. Good work. You definitely should be feeling warm now. The next one is called moving legs. Again, if you're standing, you might want to be near something you can hold on to for balance. This can be an armchair, a kitchen chair, or wall. So raise your right leg out straight in front of you, then move it out to the side so you can feel that nice stretch in the top of your leg. Then move it back to the center and back down. Repeat this with the left leg. So lift your leg up straight out in front, then move out to the side, then back straight and back down. So that's up, out to the side, back to the center and back down. And again, do that a few more times. This is really good for your hips, tummy and thighs. Slow and controlled is more challenging and rewarding. So keep going. Remember to keep that leg straight. Lift your leg up straight out in front, then move out to the side, then back straight to the center and back down. So up out straight, to the side, back straight to the center and back down. And a couple of more times. Now we have circle the sky. Raise both arms together straight up above your head and circle them in a small circle twice, using your shoulders to move too, and then push your arms down towards the ground. And again, raise your arms together straight up, circle them round twice, and push down. So raise your arms up, circle one, two, and push down. Again, this is a really good one for getting your shoulders moving and building up strength. Keep going. Really moving those shoulders and arms. We should all be getting warm now. If you want to make it a little harder, move your shoulders in even bigger circles. So just a couple more here, lifting the arms up, circling twice, and pushing down. And just one more, that's good. Next is going low. These exercises are slightly different if you are sitting or standing. So if you're standing, place your feet hip-width apart with your feet facing forward, bend at your knees slightly and try to keep your back straight, and then straighten up your legs again. Remember to keep your feet facing forward and try not to let your knees move in front of your toes. So you're just moving up and down by bending your legs, a little bit like a mini squat. The lower you go, the harder it will be. If you're sitting, just straighten out your right leg right in front of you, feeling a nice stretch down your leg, then return your foot to the floor and repeat on the other side. Whichever variation you're doing, you're working your legs. If you're standing, you are also working your bottom. Okay, so keep going, always remembering to keep your back straight. So for those standing, bending knees down and then straighten up. And sitting, raising alternate legs up and placing down. If you're standing, can you make it more challenging by going down slowly and holding at the bottom briefly? And just a few more. Next is butterfly wings. So this is a nice exercise where you're rolling your shoulders back. Bend your arms and place both hands on your shoulders and rotate your arms back in a circular motion so that you're rolling your shoulders, rolling both arms backwards at the same time. If this is a bit challenging, you can do one arm at a time. So keep moving, circling both arms back. This is great for the shoulders and the upper back. Keep moving. They can be quite energetic, these. Make the circle as wide as you can. Keep going, and just a couple more now. Now we have charging the fists. Whether you're standing or sitting, place your feet hip distance apart in a strong stance. clench your fists, holding them at chest height, then punch out with your right hand and pull back, and repeat the punch with your left. Keep going, punching with alternate hands. It's a great stress buster, this. Really think about how your muscles are responding here, making the punches slow and controlled. Just a couple more now. Good job. Now we all really should be feeling warm. If you're a little out of breath, that's a good thing. It means you've been working. And if you're not a little out of breath, can you work a little harder next time? Well done. We're nearly finished. We'll just finish off with a nice stretch and cool down. So, we're going to start with a hamstring stretch. So, feet facing forward. Step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep the right leg straight. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean your chest forward gently. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of the right leg. And now hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. Then return to an upright position and swap your legs over. So keeping your feet facing forward, this time step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep this leg straight, then bend your right leg and just lean the chest forward gently. Again, feeling that nice long stretch at the back of the left leg. And hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you are hugging a tree, directly in front of you. Your arms form a nice circle in front of you, and then cup your hands together, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across your shoulders and arms. And now hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, and finish. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice, relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant! So that was all the exercises. We hope you enjoyed them. Just to finish off, shaking out, just shake those arms and hands and then legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 today just 3 times a week can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thank you for listening.
TNS Soundings.
The folk revival emerged in the early 60s, and one of the leading singers was Canadian Gordon Lightfoot. His song Early Morning Rain capturing the heartache of being stranded far from home.
In the early morning rain, with a dollar in my hand and an aching in my heart and my pockets full of sand, I'm a long way from home. And I miss my darling so. In the early morning rain, with no place to go, out on runway number 9, big 707 set to go. Stuck here on the grass, where the cold wind blows, the liquor tasted good. And the women all were fast. Well, there she goes, my friend. She's rolling down at last. Hear the mighty engines roar.
Hello, I'm David, and here are some events that took place this week in the past. On August the 24th in 1572, a targeted group of assassinations and a wave of mob violence was directed against the Protestant Huguenots during the French Wars of Religion. Known as the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, it occurred a few days after the marriage of the Catholic French King Charles IX's sister to the Protestant King Henry III of Navarre. Many of the wealthiest and most important Huguenots had gathered in largely Catholic Paris to attend the wedding. King Charles ordered the killing of a group of prominent Huguenots, including Admiral Gaspard de Coligny, the military and political leader of the Huguenots, and the slaughter spread throughout Paris. The massacre then expanded outward to the countryside and other urban centres, lasting several weeks in all. Modern estimates for the number of dead across France vary widely from 5,000 to 30,000. Described as the worst of the century's religious massacres, the event polarised Europe, with some countries appalled. Even Tsar Ivan the Terrible expressed horror at the carnage, but others were gleefully supportive. One consequence was a large influx of Huguenot refugees arriving in England, bringing with them a wide range of desirable skills, for example in weaving and banking. On August the 25th, 2017, saw a most unusual literary event take place. The English author Sir Terry Pratchett was well known for his hugely popular comic novels, with more than 100 million books sold worldwide in 43 languages. They include the fantasy Discworld series and the apocalyptic Good Omens, co-written with his friend Neil Gaiman. Pratchett died in 2015 as a result of early-onset Alzheimer's disease. He had told Gaiman that he wanted anything that he was still working on at the time of his death to be destroyed by a steamroller. On the 25th of August 2017, his last wish was fulfilled when the hard drive containing his unfinished works was crushed under a steamroller at the Great Dorset Steam Fair. On August the 26th, 1985, the Greenpeace ship Rainbow Warrior, which had been involved in campaigns against the whaling, seal hunting, nuclear testing and nuclear waste dumping during the late 1970s and early 1980s, was sabotaged and sunk in Auckland Harbour by two explosive devices attached to its hull by operatives of the French Intelligence Service, the DGSE. One of the 12 people on board, photographer Fernando Pereira, returned to the ship after the first explosion to try to retrieve his equipment and was killed when the ship was sunk by the second, larger explosion. Two French agents were arrested, charged with murder, and briefly imprisoned. Their involvement caused a political scandal, and the French Minister of Defence resigned. Later admissions from the former head of the DGSE revealed that, in fact, three separate teams carried out the bombings, but their identities have never been officially confirmed. The French Prime Minister, Laurent Fabius, later acknowledged there had been a cover-up, saying that agents of the French Secret Service sank this boat. They were acting on orders. Following international pressure, France agreed to pay compensation to Greenpeace of $8.1 million. The wreck of Rainbow Warrior was refloated a month later,
but the damage was too extensive for repair, and the vessel was eventually scuttled in Matori Bay, New Zealand, fittingly to serve as a dive wreck and artificial reef to promote marine life. On August 27, 1979, Lord Louis Mountbatten of Burma was assassinated by the IRA. Mountbatten usually holidayed at his summer home, Classybourne Castle, in the Republic of Ireland, which was near an area known to be used as a cross-border refuge by IRA members. On the 27th of August, Mountbatten went lobster potting and tuna fishing in his 30-foot wooden boat, which had been moored in the harbour at Mullaghmore. But the previous night, IRA member Thomas McMahon had slipped onto the unguarded boat and attached a radio-controlled bomb. When Mountbatten and his party had taken the boat just a few hundred yards from the shore, the bomb was detonated, destroying the boat. Mountbatten, then aged 79, was pulled alive from the water by nearby fishermen, but died from his injuries before being brought to shore. Three others aboard, including Mountbatten's 14-year-old grandson, Nicholas, and a young crew member from Enniskillen, Paul Maxwell, were also killed as a result of the blast. The attack triggered outrage and condemnation around the world, although the IRA remained unrepentant, maintaining Mountbatten was a victim of war. On August 28, 2019, in a highly controversial move by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, Queen Elizabeth II was advised to prorogue Parliament from a date in early September until the state opening of Parliament on the 14th of October. Prorogation is the suspension of Parliament usually used to mark the end of a parliamentary session. Since Parliament would reconvene just 17 days before the United Kingdom's scheduled departure from the European Union on the 31st of October 2019, the move was seen by many opposition politicians and political commentators as an unconstitutional attempt by the Prime Minister to avoid parliamentary scrutiny of the government's Brexit plans in the final weeks leading up to Brexit. Johnson and his government defended the prorogation as a routine political process that ordinarily follows the selection of a new Prime Minister and would allow the government to refocus on a legislative agenda, but the prorogation was challenged in court and ultimately declared null and of no effect on September the 24th. Parliament resumed sitting the following day. On August the 29th in 1831, Charles Darwin returned home after a visit to Wales with student friends to find a letter proposing him as a suitable naturalist for a self-funded place on HMS Beagle. The ship was to leave 4 weeks later on an expedition to chart the coastline of South America, a voyage which would help Darwin formulate his revolutionary theory of evolution by natural selection and set him on his way to becoming one of the most famous biologists in history. Robert Darwin initially objected to his son's participation, regarding it as a waste of time, but was persuaded by his brother-in-law, Josiah Wedgwood, to agree to and fund his son's participation. The Beagle sailed across the Atlantic and then carried out detailed hydrographic surveys around the coasts of southern South America, returning to England via Tahiti and Australia. Darwin was able to spend two-thirds of the time on land, observing and collecting specimens. The initial offer to Darwin told him the voyage would last 2 years. It lasted almost five. And on the night of the 30th of August 2021, General Chris Donoghue boarded a C-17 cargo plane at Kabul Airport, becoming the very last American service member to be airlifted from Afghanistan, and marking both the end of the evacuation of American forces and the end of the war in Afghanistan. At 19 years and 10 months, this is the longest war fought by the USA, 5 months longer than that in Vietnam. The evacuation was a large-scale operation conducted by the United States and its allies during the final stages of the US and NATO troop withdrawal following the Taliban's rapid takeover of Afghanistan, and was one of the largest airlifts in history. Between the 14th and the 25th of August, the US alone evacuated about 82,000 people from Kabul airport, including US citizens and vulnerable Afghans. In total, over 122,000 people were airlifted abroad. The evacuation was completed on August the 30th, one day before a deadline agreed upon with the Taliban. And that concludes the summary of events that took place this week in the past.
This next song is on a marvellous CD by Hugh Chidgey and Catherine Handley called Where the Angels Sleep.
I don't know why I always run. Is it fear of the fall or fear of the touch? I don't know where the angels sleep. And I don't know how to really love. I've never stood still long enough. I don't know. I'm alive, standing strong, no further forward, just further along. Hold on to my pride and dig in deep. It's pulling me down and I am no closer to release. I don't know.
Hello, this is Sue. Here are some famous people who had their birthdays this week. On the 24th of August in 1759, the British politician and philanthropist William Wilberforce was born in Hull. As a young man, he inherited enough money to allow him to become independently wealthy, and he enjoyed a hedonistic lifestyle as a student in Cambridge. He decided to go into politics and become an independent MP for Hull, aged only 21, spending a large sum of money to ensure he got enough votes. Although he took his role as an MP seriously, he also continued to enjoy the good things in life and was known for his poor timekeeping and disorganisation in relation to his job. Aged 25, he underwent a religious conversion to evangelism, and regretting his past ways, vowed to devote his life work in the service of God. He kept this vow and spent the rest of his life working tirelessly for causes such as the Society of Suppression of Vice, British missionary work in India, the foundation of the Church Mission Society, and the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. In later years, Wilberforce headed the parliamentary campaign against the British slave trade. He campaigned for 20 years until the Slave Trade Act was passed in 1807 and continued his involvement after he resigned from Parliament due to ill health. That campaign led to the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833, which abolished slavery in most of the British Empire. Wilberforce died just 3 days after hearing that the passage of the Act through Parliament was assured. He was buried in Westminster Abbey, close to his friend, William Pitt the Younger. On the 25th of August in 1930, the Scottish actor Sean Connery was born. He had a humble start to life, and his first job was as a milkman, and then he joined the Navy aged 16, but had to leave on medical grounds aged 19, after which he worked as a lorry driver, a lifeguard, labourer, artist's model, and coffin polisher. Alongside this, he was a keen bodybuilder and footballer, even being offered a contract to play for Manchester United, although he turned it down in order to try his hand at acting. It was a slow start, with bit parts here and there, on stage and television, which gradually grew to larger roles and work in films. And at 32, he landed his first Bond film, Dr. No, followed by From Russia with Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, Diamonds Are Forever, and finally, Never Say Never. James Bond's creator, Ian Fleming, originally thought Connery was a little too rough to play the title role, but after the success of Dr. No, he was converted and subsequently gave the character a Scottish heritage in his later novels. This was handy, as doing any other accent than Scottish was not in Connery's acting repertoire. Although it was the making of him, Connery grew tired of the role of James Bond and diversified into a range of roles, many of which were critically acclaimed. He received numerous accolades, including an Academy Award for the Best Supporting Actor in The Untouchables and a BAFTA for the Best Actor in The Name of the Rose. He was also made a knight for services to drama. On the 26th of August, 1918, the American mathematician Katherine Johnson was born. Her calculations of orbital mechanics as a NASA employee were critical to the success of the first and subsequent US crewed space flights. She showed an aptitude for maths from an early age, achieving a maths degree aged only 18, and became the only African-American woman to attend a previously white-only graduate school. Working in the field of research maths was not easy for a woman in the 1950s, never mind an African-American woman, and the family had to move in order for her to get a job with the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, which later became NASA, one of the few organizations that would hire her. She started work in a pool of women performing calculations, but after being temporarily assigned to help an all-male flight research team, her contributions meant she was never sent back to the pool. She became an integral member of the spaceflight team, calculating trajectories, launch windows, and backup navigation charts for early crewed spaceflights. Astronaut John Glenn refused to fly unless Katherine had verified the calculations. She worked for NASA until her retirement, focusing on the space shuttle program and a human mission to Mars in her later years. As you might imagine, she won countless awards and honorary doctorates for her work. Her achievements are amazing for any person, but even more so for an African-American woman who would have had to overcome both racism and sexism. She lived to the grand old age of 101 and is a truly inspirational figure. On the 27th of August in 1875, the American suffragist and philanthropist Catherine McCormick was born. Her plea for women's rights began at university, where she campaigned against women being required to wear hats at all times, even in the chemistry labs. Hard to imagine that. She argued that feathered hats were a fire hazard, and the policy was quite rightly changed. She went on to campaign for votes for women, and particularly for the legislation of birth control for women. She worked throughout the 1920s, posing as a French or German scientist to obtain large orders of diaphragms and smuggling them into the US from Europe by sewing them into the linings of her clothes. McCormick had married into a very wealthy family, but her husband sadly developed a form of schizophrenia only 2 years after the marriage and was declared legally incompetent. His illness inspired her to establish a research foundation looking into the effects of hormones on mental health, and she established the Foundation for Neuroendocrine Research and a research centre for the mentally ill, which she funded through the 1930s and the 1940s. In the 1950s, she began to fund research into an oral contraceptive pill, investing the equivalent of $20 million. The contraceptive pill was approved for sale in America in 1957, but she continued funding its further development throughout the 1960s. McCormick then turned her ambition to building accommodation for female students at a prestigious technology university, thereby increasing the number of women students from 3% to 40%, opening up the science and engineering professions to a large part of the population who had previously been excluded. She died in 1967 and left significant legacies to fund further research into contraception and for the training of female doctors. It's amazing to think of the changes she helped to make happen for women in her lifetime and beyond. On the 28th of August in 1906, the English poet, writer, and broadcaster John Betjeman was born. He had a privileged upbringing and went to Oxford to study English language and literature, but concentrated more on enjoying himself and pursuing his own interests than attending to his studies, and, not surprisingly, he failed to get a degree. He got jobs as a secretary, teacher, film critic, and gossip columnist, before working for several years at the Architectural Review, where he could further develop his lifelong interest in architecture. He also wrote the Shell Guides for Britain's growing number of motorists with information on how to get to historical sites. He was rejected for military service in the Second World War, so did work for the Ministry of Information instead. By this time, he had written and published 12 books of his poems, and these were becoming increasingly popular. His styles were very accessible, and often wryly comic. It also was easy to read, as it had a simple rhythm, actually rhymed, and dealt with very ordinary themes that people could relate to. He famously wrote a poem about what he felt was the awful modernisation of Slough, with the iconic line, "Come friendly bombs and fall on Slough, it isn't fit for humans now." Betjeman became Poet Laureate, aged 66, which led to an even wider audience appreciating his poetry. He managed to voice the thoughts and aspirations of many ordinary people, while retaining the respect of many of his fellow poets. Betjeman also continued his passion for architecture, particularly churches, and made several well-respected films in this field. He also campaigned to save various historical buildings in London, and was instrumental in saving St Pancras Station from being demolished, where there is now a very charming statue to commemorate him. On the 29th of August, 1947, the American academic and inventor Temple Grandin was born. She's best known for her work on humane treatment of livestock and educating people about the condition of autism with which she is diagnosed. As a toddler, Grandin was thought to have brain damage, and it was recommended that she be institutionalised. However, her mother fought against this, and with support of a speech therapist, Grandin was able to learn to communicate and attend mainstream schools until she was 14. She describes how she was ostracised and ridiculed for her unusual behaviours, and at 15 transferred to a school for gifted children, where she was much happier. There, she was encouraged to turn her obsessions into productive assignments, such as her first invention, age 18, which was a hug box designed to soothe individuals with autism without the discomfort of physical contact from other people. Grandin has written extensively about her autism, describing how she thinks totally in pictures rather than words, and compares her vast visual memory to full-length movies in her head that can be replayed at will, allowing her to notice tiny details. She describes using spoken and written words as a second language to her, although the fact that she can use words so well has allowed her to give an insight into autism that few people have been able to achieve, and furthered the understanding and acceptance of this complex condition. Grandin has studied psychology and animal science and dedicated herself to using her visualization skills to develop insight into the minds of animals. She is able to notice details that cause them stress, and then make changes to their environment, by designing more humane animal handling equipment and processes. She has also raised awareness of her moral duty towards animals. For someone who was deemed to be brain damaged, she has had an incredibly positive impact on the world. On the 30th of August in 1941, the British broadcaster Sue McGregor was born. Her father was an army doctor, and she spent her childhood in Burma, South Africa, and Switzerland, before moving to London, where she worked as a junior secretary at the BBC. She returned to South Africa for a short time, where she began her radio career hosting a show called Woman's World. But as the political climate deteriorated, she decided to return to London, where she became a reporter for The World at One in 1967. She went on to host Woman's Hour from 1972 to 1987, before joining Radio 4's The Today programme until 2002. McGregor has said that there were a lot of competing egos amongst the presenters, such as Brian Redhead, John Humphreys, and Jim McNaughty, with the intense rivalry as to who would get to interview controversial guests on the show. She went on to host A Good Read, also on Radio 4, serving as the show's longest-serving presenter. McGregor has been awarded a CBE for her services to broadcasting and is a trustee of UNICEF, alongside being an honorary graduate of several universities. She has never married, but revealed in her autobiography that she has had relationships with Leonard Rossiter and Robin Day, among others. Her voice will be instantly recognisable to many radio listeners who will have heard her dulcet tones during her 50-year broadcasting career.
Folk rock came of age in the late 60s, and this song slips easily into that category. A plaintive number by The Band, about getting old and retiring gratefully to a rocking chair on a porch. A very American image.
Hang around, Willie boy, don't you raise the sails anymore. It's for sure I spent my whole life at sea, and I'm pushing 873. Now there's only one place that was meant for me.
Hello, Clive Davis from the Wildlife Sound Recording Society here with your monthly sound recordings. This month is an assortment of summer migrants, all bar one, recorded by yours faithfully on Cannock Chase, a lowland heath close to my home address in Staffordshire. the male cuckoo needs no introduction. However, there are some quite unusual vocalisations towards the end, followed by the female's bubbling call. Following is a swallow's nest in an old ice house in a small community on the west coast of Scotland, the walnut knot from our local patch. Back to Cannock Chase and the cheering nightjar on its perch, followed by a willow warbler. lastly, a redstart, and then the trilling call of a wood warbler that danced on the branches in front of me as it sang.
A century ago this month, Geoffrey de Havilland founded the Herz Aircraft Company that would play a major role in aviation history. His legacy is marked by a new £2 million exhibition space. This article is from Hertfordshire Life. It's called Blue Sky Thinking. I'm Sue, and the words are by Richard Burton. Lancashire has its cotton mills, Staffordshire its breweries, Cornwall its tin mines, and here in Hertfordshire we have aerospace. I was reminded of that as I entered the newly upgraded de Havilland Aircraft Museum. That, and the fact that a satellite launched in February from Cape Canaveral to orbit the sun, is just the latest space explorer built by Airbus in Stevenage. So it was ironic then that, like some rookie pilot who left his goggles behind, I completely overshot the country lane of a landing strip that takes you to the B-556 near London Coney, to the exquisite Tudor Manor that is Salisbury Hall, and home to the de Havilland collection. You're not the first to do that, curator Alastair Hodgson told me. We're a bit of a well-kept secret along this road. It's part of the attraction. The former engineer, who had himself stumbled upon the place in days when, like lots of youngsters, he was captivated by Airfix models, agreed to show me around its latest asset, a giant hangar that was, until a few fateful months ago, set to be the centrepiece of celebrations to mark 100 years of this most iconic of aircraft companies. The Sir Geoffrey de Havilland hangar, funded by a national lottery grant approaching £2 million, has added a new dimension to this volunteer-run museum, which opened in 1959, making it the oldest aviation museum in Britain. The hangar is bolted to one named after Walter Goldsmith, former owner and restorer of Salisbury Hall, which was opened by the Queen Mother in 1982. For anyone with a germ of interest in aviation, this was money well spent. It not only includes a 100-seat mezzanine for functions, it is a space where enthusiasts can get up close to planes and watch and chat to restorers at work. It's a place where the Comet, the world's first jetliner, lies stretched out into the distance, and Second World War guided missiles line up along the walls. It's also where the first drone, the DH-82B, Queen Bee, controlled not from a handheld device, but from a telephone dial mounted on a metal box the size of a litter bin, sits yards away from the C-24 autogyro, the cartoon-like half-plane, half-helicopter, once built in secret near Hatfield. And it's one where any of the 100 or so volunteers will instinctively chip in with anecdotes and the sort of technical detailed, too wordy to fit in on any of the displays or video screens, that guide visitors on their socially distanced one-way tour. It's grown out of all recognition in the past 10 years, says Alistair. But then again, things had to change quickly. When you're a small museum in a growing world, eventually you're going to run out of runway. I asked him what makes the museum special. There are lots of museums that display planes, but we try to be a more coherent collection. There are very few of those in the UK. When I visit a museum, I like to leave feeling that someone has told me a story, and that's exactly what we try to do here. I can't improve on what former BBC Director General Lord Reith said when he spoke of needing to inform, educate, and entertain. We need to do just that. Thanks to a well-executed marketing campaign, the museum grew the sort of inclusive audience essential to sustain a visitor attraction. We used to get ex-pilots or good old boys from Hawker Siddeley, but if you want to survive, you have to get mum, dad and two kids, Alistair explains. That's not to dismiss the retired airmen, many of whom bring with them their own stories, such as the elderly chap who took one look at the nose of a trident and announced, "I think I've flown that," and so he had. His wife confirmed it. She was the stewardess, and they met on board. In fact, as recently as a few weeks ago, the museum was able to reunite, albeit online, two members of the last crew of a Sea Venom. The pilot was from Buxton in Derbyshire. The navigator was local. They hadn't seen each other for 60 years. That webinar was part of the effort to keep the place alive during lockdown. That, and 50 short instructional films, shot on events manager Stephanie Marshall's mobile phone. All a far cry from the 10-strong tour groups Alistair once led around the hangars. The Cub Scouts researching for their badges, teenagers doing GCSEs, or the families who would fill the small field of a car park, big enough to take 60 at a time. Having to lock down was heartbreaking after all the work we'd done, Alistair says. Business was booming, then we lost it all in a couple of weeks. We were open for just 28 days before we had to lock up. It's unlikely we'll see us fully function again until November. It's unlikely we'll see us fully functioning again until November. Today, people are back, but numbers are smaller. And that's a blessing because not all the stewards, many typically of retirement age, were happy to return so soon. Even so, the ones that were are here, clad in PPE visors and certainly not reluctant to engage. One who saw me admiring the autogyro stepped forward with a black and white video on his phone when he overheard me question its airworthiness. Another told me of his J.R. Hartley moment, of finding the book Flying Minnows by a First World War fighter pilot, writing as Roger V, in the second-hand book rack after searching fruitlessly for it for years. But it's a museum, after all, one where stories come as thick and fast as a volley from a front-mounted Lewis automatic. "They are what makes us what we are," says the marketing manager, Mike Nevin. While the museum is about products we display, it's also about the stories they prompt from the people who come to see them. Preserving the heritage is important, as de Havilland was one of the biggest innovators of the 20th century in terms of aviation. And what we have here are not just one or two aircraft, but an entire lineage. And then there's the location. Salisbury House has enough stories of its own to tell. Aside from its well-documented wartime legacy, aviation first came to Salisbury Hall in October 1939, when the de Havilland Mosquito design team moved from the company HQ in Hatfield as a security precaution against the government stopping work on the project. This once moated manor house, knocked down and rebuilt several times, was home to Nell Gwynn in the 17th century and Lady Randolph Churchill at the start of the 20th, even providing the isolation a young Winston Churchill needed to write his speeches. The museum tells it all from the beginning, preceding the de Havilland Aircrafts Company formation 100 years ago this month. One of the first images to greet visitors is of the de Havilland's wife, Louise, stitching together the fabric for one of the first aircraft wings on a classic Singer sewing machine. Behind her is the propeller of a BE-2, which de Havilland designed and flew himself to a height of 10,560 feet, a record at the time, on August 12, 1912. That was 3 years after his first attempt, one that, thanks to the unstable design and pilot inexperience, he and fellow designer Frank Hurl had never seen an aircraft before, saw it crash, only to be salvaged and taken to a workshop in Fulham. Here, a more successful aircraft was built and eventually sold to the RAF factory in Farnborough for £400. The sale secured jobs there for de Havilland and his friend and fellow pioneer Hale. It was there that de Havilland was able to design and test fly many of his own aircraft, including that BE-2. When the First World War broke out, the pair joined the aircraft manufacturing company, Airco, at Hendon, producing fighters, trainers, and the DH-10 twin-engine bomber, all designed by de Havilland. When the First World War ended, it was the aviation business that crashed, and Airco was sold initially to BSA, with de Havilland forming his eponymous company at Stag Lane Aerodrome in Edgware on September 15, 1920, taking around 60 Airco staff with him. Testing and then production was moved to a new aerodrome on the former farmland in Hatfield in the 1930s. During this decade, the company produced a highly successful series of light touring and training aircraft, including the DH-2 Tiger Moth, which became the standard RAF elementary trainer during the Second World War. The rest, as they say, is history. The company would continue at Hatfield Aerodrome, creating innovation after innovation with the Mosquito, Dove, Vampire, Chipmunk, Venom, Sea Vixen, Comet, and many others. And that history is all there down a lane you may well overshoot if you don't use those goggles and trust your instruments. Well, sat-nav anyway.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Simon Martin with an audio-described visit to the Repair Café in Shrewsbury, Shropshire. The Repair Café movement started in the Netherlands in 2009 and has since become global with over 3,600 venues. They're free community events, and wherever you live, there's likely to be one not too far away. Shrewsbury Repair Café meets on the third Saturday of the month between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. It's held at the United Reformed Church near the English Bridge. I'm standing outside on a day of blue sky and sunshine, a buddleia bush on my left beside me. There's level access from the other side of the building, but I'm taking the short flight of steps to St. Nicholas Hall. There's a lady ahead of me, bringing a vacuum cleaner in a carrier bag. She has a small dog on a lead and is being greeted by one of the team. To my right is a room where people are waiting to have their items to repair checked in. I carry on past and into the hall where the Repair Café proper is underway. It's a large room, well lit with natural light from windows on both sides. The immediate impression is of a friendly, welcoming place with a buzz of conversation. On the left, an A board with a list of items for repair this week. A tick next to the ones already fixed. Kettle, radio, mixer, clock, coat. In front of me, a table with items waiting to be mended and the reception team filling in the forms to attach to objects on their journey through the cafe. To my right, the table with teas, coffee and cake. The cafe part is staffed by members of the church congregation. There's no charge, though donations to cover costs are welcomed. Ranged around the room, any number of volunteer fixers surrounded by their tools and equipment. In the middle of the space, a large, low table with seats all around. It's the social hub of the place, where folk are waiting for things to be repaired and enjoying a cuppa and conversation. In winter, the cafe is a designated warm space. It is okay to come for company and cake as it is to have something fixed. With the social table to my left, I make my way around the room anti-clockwise. First up, on my right, is the textile team with fabrics, needles, threads and sewing machines. Ruth is carefully stitching pale purple cashmere.
Some of these lovely turtle dove fingerless mittens.
A beautiful purple colour.
But the owner has just been, because I know her daughter's come to help at the repair cafe, and so she's taken the repaired ones back, and these are what she was wearing. So we're talking about mending them quickly before the holes get any bigger.
Sounds like
preventative.
At the other end of Ruth's table, Jules is doing one of her decorative, visible repairs, stitching the back pocket of a pair of denim jeans.
Yes, somebody's obviously losing their loose change out of their back pocket.
Oh,
so
right.
Just
put a patch behind it and then woven it in.
One of your visual?
Yes, it is, yeah. Here we've got a sample of some others that I do, some colourful weaving, or if it's a child's garment, maybe to...
I'd like one of those.
Yeah, it's the Up House from Walt Disney.
Yes.
A little dog or flowers, stars, anything really that... appeals to the person.
And you embroider that over the repair that you've done?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's reinforced behind, repaired, then has the embroider on the top. So hopefully it should hold.
Viv nods to me. She's about to fire up her sewing machine. Time to move on. Continuing clockwise, the social coffee table still to my left is abuzz with conversation, and a couple of dogs are being spoiled rotten with plenty of attention. Pete's the horologist, with magnifiers, bright light and clock-repairing tools. People bringing their items for repair are invited and very welcome to discuss, and where possible, help with their repairs.
So what we have here, Linda has brought in a lovely little... I suppose mantle clock, really, isn't it? A lovely little mantle clock that's got a quartz movement inserted in it. We've found out that actually it's just the battery needs changing, so we've advised her where to go and get that changed. But also the little insert into the metal case has become loose.
Okay.
So I would recommend to you, Linda, you put just a little circle of double-sided tape. Because it's leaning back and you don't want it to be glued in, because you have to be able to take it out as and when the batteries need changing. But just a little circle of double-sided tape should hold it.
Yes.
Next up, Marion has her jewellery equipment set up. Boxes of beads, findings, cords and necklace wire.
What was it you wanted done with the bracelet?
It was just wondering if you could make the rings a bit smaller, if you could do those as well.
Oh, yeah.
But it was getting that bit repaired, really, that was the main thing.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, I haven't got any chain with me.
Mm.
If you wanted to either bring it back next time and I'll bring some chain for you to look at with me.
Yeah, would you?
Yeah, but it isn't... We're not on next time.
Moving on again, past a table with a broken blue ceramic jug like a Grecian amphora. It's held on its side in a vise, the handle in three pieces. The first piece is carefully placed in position and being left for the adhesive to dry. Just beyond the amphora is Brian, working on an electrically operated picnic cool box. I've noticed him tinkering with this one for a while.
I'm changing the switch on this cool box, which also heats.
Yeah.
So...
I've been watching you for ages. You've been taking it to pieces and cleaning everything up. Have you managed to get it back together again?
Well, I tried to... Yeah, it's going back together. But the switch I was hoping to use to replace it turns out to be not suitable. So I'm having to do a bit of lateral thinking.
Okay.
But I think it'll work in the end.
After Brian and his lateral thinking, I'll let the next three fixers, Peter, Robert and Aaron, speak for themselves.
Well, just trying to mend this iron.
Okay.
I've just got to it, so I'm getting a meter out to check that there's continuity, the fuse is good, and there's power getting to the iron.
Robert, you've got this sort of fiddly draw handle.
Yeah, it's one of these where the metal is really very brittle, and it was obviously not in position. And so I carefully tried to sort of reposition it using two sets of pliers. Yeah. And it's one of these sort of very brittle alloy jobbies. Arguably, if it snaps, it's a new handle. If I tried to do anything else with it, I'm afraid I might snap the whole thing. So I'm going to leave it and hope that it's good enough.
Thank you. I've got a door handle that I'm changing the spring inside because it had snapped, and I'm struggling to refit the
spring clip thing.
Yeah.
And judging by the colour of your fingers, it all oily and greasy is there.
Oh, it is.
I'll not disturb Simon. He's working away, surrounded by wires, a multimeter, soldering iron, and his very serious-looking electronic equipment. He's deep inside an old radio, the kind powered by big square batteries. And I've now completed a circuit of the room, which still buzzes with activity and conversation. I'm back at the start, at the check-in desk, and Tracy, who keeps tabs on the repairs, and is a spreadsheet wizard.
Still so much stuff to be repaired, so I'm hoping we can get through it all today.
Okay, I'll stop recording in a minute, start seeing if I can fix some stuff.
Yeah.
That's telling me. Stop audio recording and get back to mending things. But before I go, there are repair cafes in towns and cities throughout the UK and in dozens of countries around the world. If you'd like to know more, please visit www.repaircafe.org. For the Shrewsbury Repair Cafe in particular, please search for us by name, online and on Facebook. Repair cafes are friendly places, so never be afraid to ask for any assistance you might need.
TNS Soundings.
We're nearing the end of this week's programme. It just remains for me to thank our contributors, Elizabeth, Jilly, Liz, Fiona and Michelle for reading the news, and the Hearts Advertiser for providing it. Thanks to John and Wendy for the radio listings, our friends at Wharfdale Talking News for the audio-described TV listings, TNF Soundings for 10 Today, and the Wildlife Sound Recording Society for their evocative recordings. David read the events in history, and Sue presented famous birthdays. Thanks too to Liz and Richard for copying and sending the USB drives. Steve will be here next week with News Extra. But that's all from me in August 2025. We close with yet another folk style, the dynamic sound of French-Canadian group Le Vent du Nord. I hope you enjoy it. And remember to let us know about music you'd like to hear on our programmes. Goodbye for now, and keep well.
Pour la guerre à Saint-Louis, s'en va faire ses adieux, son front chagrin incliné vers la terre, une douce larme y coulait de ses yeux. Mais il lui dit à sa douce un conseil, à mon retour je serai ton amant. Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir. Mais il lui répète encore, au revoir, ma Louise, au revoir. Mon beau galant, si tu t'en vas en guerre, de te revoir, l'espoir je l'ai perdu. Quand tu seras tué dans la bataille, moi ta Louise, je ne t'y reverrai plus. Si tu m'aimais comme tu me l'as fait voir, tu ne penserais jamais de me quitter. Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, ma Louise, au revoir. Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, ma Louise, au revoir. Belle que je t'embrasse, viens recevoir un doux baiser d'adieu. Apportez-moi aussi un blanc mouchoir pour essuyer les larmes de mes yeux.
Cessez vos pleurs, la belle, séchez vos larmes, car sur ma foi, je jure de vous aimer.
Mais il lui dit, au revoir.
fait que pleurer. La nuit et le jour, elle pleure, elle se lamente en regrettant son joli temps passé.
Que Dieu veuille bien préserver de la guerre tous les amants et filles à marier.
Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, à nous, au revoir.
Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, à nous, au revoir.
Six mois à la porte de Louise, le bon galant, trois coups sans vous frapper. Ouvrez, ouvrez la belle votre porte à votre amant qui revient de l'armée.
La belle se lève et va ouvrir la porte à son amant, à son bien-aimé.
Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, à Louis, au revoir.
Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, à Louis, au revoir.
Au bout d'un mois, on célèbre la noce. Tous les parrains étaient tous invités. Tous les amis, tous les gens de la noce se furent aussitôt dans un grand deuil plongé, car tout à coup la belle est tombée morte entre les bras de son amant chéri. Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, ma Louise, au revoir. Mais il lui dit, il lui répète encore, au revoir, ma Louise, au revoir.
Mais il lui dit,